Imagine a company, right, that manufactures something just totally boring and interchangeable, like, I don't know, plastic cups.
Yeah, something you wouldn't even think twice about.
Exactly. Now imagine that company's stock just exploding 1,000% in a single year, propelling it into a trillion-dollar empire. You would think the market had completely lost its mind.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, usually when we look at tech hardware, all the glory goes to the logic chips, the brains of the operation.
Right, we picture these brilliant engineers drafting the architecture of the future, and we just assume the rest of the physical machine is, well, just interchangeable silicon.
But in May 2026, that assumption was just completely shattered.
It really was. Over the span of just a few weeks, three companies that make commodity tech components, Samsung, Micron, and SK Hynix, they all crossed the $1 trillion market cap threshold.
And the velocity of that climb is what truly broke everyone's models. I mean, we saw charts that you typically only associate with wild speculative assets.
Yeah, like crypto or something.
Exactly. But applied to the heavy, slow-moving industrial reality of semiconductor manufacturing.
SK Hynix went up 10 times in 12 months. Their first quarter revenue for 2026 jumped nearly 198%.
Which is just staggering for a hardware manufacturer.
And operating profits spiked a jaw-dropping 405%. Which brings us to our mission for today's deep dive. For you listening, we're looking at this brilliant essay from the Memory Stack series, and we really need to cut through the massive hype here.
Right, because the core question is whether we are witnessing a permanent structural shift in the tech world, a true supercycle driven by AI.
Or if we are just staring at the absolute peak of a massive impending crash. Because the author makes a really good point to remind us that saying this time is different is notoriously the most expensive sentence in
It
finance.
really is. Confusing a genuinely world-changing asset like AI compute with the stock price is how smart people get wiped out.
Yeah, happens all the time.
AI has undeniably changed the physical geometry of this industry, but the underlying mechanics of how these components are actually manufactured, priced, and sold, that presents a much more dangerous reality.
Okay, let's unpack this. If you crack open a modern AI server, memory makes up 40 to 50% of the total cost.
Yeah, it's a massive chunk.
And if it's a board heavily loaded with high bandwidth memory, or HBM, those memory costs rival the GPU itself. But before we get into how a boring commodity became the most valuable real estate in tech, we need to establish what we're actually talking about.
Right, the basics.
So for you listening, think of a computer's memory in two parts. You have DRAM, which is like the temporary working space on your desk. It needs to be incredibly fast, but when you turn the power off, your desk is cleared.
It's all gone.
Exactly. Then you have NAND, which is like the massive filing cabinet down in the basement. It's permanent storage, it's slower, but it holds everything.
And historically, a bit of standard DRAM from Samsung is perfectly interchangeable with a bit from Micron. They compete almost entirely on
A
price.
total commodity.
Right. And because of that physical interchangeability and the way the factories are built, memory isn't just a somewhat cyclical business. It is famously the most violently cyclical business in the entire tech stack.
Just brutal swings.
Exactly. The shorthand you'll hear on trading desks captures the base rate perfectly. They say, up 10x, down 90%.
Wait, down 90%? That is not a normal business cycle. That sounds like an industry actively trying to destroy itself.
What's fascinating here is that the violence of the cycle isn't due to bad management. It is pure arithmetic, driven by structural forces that compound in the worst possible way.
Okay, how so?
First, new memory fabs. The factories that print these chips cost well over $10 billion and take 2 to 3 years just to build and equip.
Right, so the decision to add supply happens years before that supply actually hits the market.
Exactly.
And capital expenditure in this space is incredibly lumpy. You can't just build like 5% of a fab to meet a 5% increase in demand.
No, you're all in.
It's like needing an extra bedroom for a new baby. But the only way to get one is to build an entire 50-story skyscraper that takes 3 years to finish.
That's a great way to put it.
And by the time it's done, the kid is in preschool and you have 49 empty floors. How does any company survive that kind of upfront cost when demand fluctuates so much?
Well, to survive, they have to navigate the lethal arithmetic of fixed versus marginal costs. You have massive fixed costs to build that 50-story skyscraper.
Right, the $10 billion.
Yeah. But the marginal cost, the actual cost to produce one extra silicon wafer once the factory is running, is incredibly low.
Okay, that makes sense.
So when demand drops and prices fall, logic dictates a normal business would stop making the product to clear out inventory.
Right, you just pause the machines.
But in memory manufacturing, a company will keep running a fad even if the market price drops below their total cost to make the chip.
Because they still need cash flow to cover the massive depreciation on that $10 billion building. An idle factory is essentially just a giant bonfire for cash.
Exactly. Every single manufacturer operates under that exact same logic. Nobody cuts output.
Wow. So they just keep running the machines, flooding an already saturated market.
Which leads to a massive glut. And that glut only clears when prices plummet so deeply that it destroys the weakest players in the market entirely.
And this isn't ancient history either. The source details the 2017 to 2018 boom, where data centers and smartphones pushed prices to the moon.
Oh yeah, everyone thought it was a new era.
Analysts everywhere declared the cyclical nature of the business was dead. It was a structural supercycle. And then in 2019, prices crashed 40%.
And we saw an even more dramatic version recently. The 2021 pandemic boom triggered a massive spike for remote work hardware. Prices surged.
Because everyone needed a new laptop.
Right. But the subsequent 2022 to 2023 bust was brutal. Fabs were running below cost. Micron and SK Hynix posted multi-billion dollar quarterly losses.
Multi-billion?
Yeah, and Samsung's chip division, which is normally the profit engine of the entire corporation, barely broke even.
The terrifying part is the speed of it all. The gap from the 2018 peak to the 2021 peak was 3 years.
Mm.
But the gap from that brutal 2023 trough to the trillion-dollar peaks we saw in May 2026 was barely 2 years. The whiplash is turning faster than human investors can even react.
When you have an industry dynamic that physically forces companies to sell products at a loss just to keep the lights on, the arithmetic eventually claims victims.
Which naturally brings us to the survivors. The graveyard of the 1990s DRAM market is completely packed. There used to be dozens of companies making these chips.
Oh, it was a totally crowded market.
Germany's Commando went bankrupt after the 2008 financial crisis. Japan's Elpida, which was actually formed by merging previous survivors, went bankrupt and was absorbed by Micron in 2013.
The extreme cyclicality basically manufactured today's landscape.
Now we just have the big three, Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron. Together, they control over 95% of the global DRAM supply.
Which is a massive consolidation.
Oh, but wait, if a market with 20 players is a race to the bottom because someone is always desperate enough to cut prices, does having only three players actually stop the cycle? Or does it just change the rules of the game?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it fundamentally changes the game theory. A market with 20 competitors is a coordination nightmare.
Right. Someone always breaks ranks.
Exactly. For short-term cash flow, triggering the prisoner's dilemma where everyone loses. But three players who all vividly remember bleeding billions of dollars in the 2023 bloodbath, they have learned to implicitly coordinate.
So they don't need like a smoky back room to fix prices.
Mm-hmm.
They just watch each other's public earnings calls and capital expenditure guidance.
Yeah, they recognize that flooding the market now to gain a tiny fraction of market share would just cannibalize their own profit margins.
It's just not worth it anymore.
Right. They haven't completely eliminated the temptation to cheat, but they've made cooperation highly rational. They are choosing to prioritize average selling price over raw volume.
And because the industry has consolidated into this highly disciplined, rational oligopoly, the bulls in the market are loudly arguing that the historical cycle is finally broken.
The "this time is different" narrative is back in full force.
Yeah, the essay lays out several structural claims supporting this new supercycle theory. And, I mean, some of these shifts genuinely are unprecedented.
The primary argument is the fundamental shape of the demand. This isn't a temporary spike driven by a new iPhone release or, you know, a crypto mining craze that will just evaporate.
Right, those were always fleeting.
We are talking about the rollout of a completely new computing substrate. AI models require massive amounts of HBM for training, high-capacity server DRAM for inference, and vast enterprise NAND storage just to hold the data lakes.
It's everything at once. All these vectors are rising simultaneously.
Yes, and to handle that demand, the commercial structure has evolved. Hyperscalers, the massive cloud providers like Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, aren't just buying chips on the spot market anymore.
Right, they are signing volume LTAs or long-term agreements.
Exactly. They are locking in multi-year contracts for volume, though crucially not price.
Oh, so instead of a memory company building a $10 billion factory on the mere hope that demand materializes, they effectively have the hyperscalers underwriting the capital risk.
You nailed it. That removes a massive amount of the speculative risk that fueled previous crashes. The fabs are basically pre-sold.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, though. It's the physical geometry of HBM. High bandwidth memory isn't just faster DRAM, it is structurally different.
It really is a marvel of engineering.
Right. Instead of laying memory chips flat next to the processor, HBM stacks them vertically like a 3D high-rise to pack more memory into a smaller footprint.
And because of how they are manufactured, creating that high-rise takes up roughly 3 times the raw silicon wafer area of standard memory.
Meanwhile, the sheer amount of HBM required per GPU is just skyrocketing. If you look at NVIDIA's hardware, the H100 in 2022 used 80 gigabytes of HBM.
Which seemed like a lot at the time.
Right. But the B300 rolling out in 2025 demands 288 gigabytes. It is more than doubling per generation.
So think about the physical space on the factory floor. Every silicon wafer dedicated to making HBM is a wafer that is not making the standard memory that goes into your laptop, your car, or your smartphone.
It literally physically crowds out the commodity chips.
Exactly. This forces a shortage across the entire tech stack. Buyers in other industries realize there is less standard memory being made, they panic, and the prices for older technology shoot up right alongside the cutting-edge stuff.
Which perfectly sets up the margin argument. HBM is not a basic commodity that you can just swap out.
Not at all. It is co-engineered deeply with the customer and heavily constrained by the packaging process, specifically TSMC's CoWoS technology.
We should define CoWoS for a second. It stands for Chip on Wafer on Substrate.
Yeah, and think of it like trying to wire an entire city block of skyscrapers together so perfectly that billions of signals can travel between them flawlessly in a fraction of a nanosecond.
Wow, that sounds impossible.
It's incredibly difficult. You are taking these stacked memory dies and the GPU and placing them incredibly close together on a single silicon substrate. It is remarkably difficult to manufacture. The failure rates can be punishing, and it acts as a massive bottleneck on the entire supply chain.
And SK Hynix happens to hold over 50% of this highly constrained HBM market. The whole segment is projected to hit $100 billion by 2028.
That's a huge pie.
Because the packaging is so complex and custom, a hyperscaler can't just, you know, dump SK Hynix and buy a cheaper version from someone else next quarter.
No, the switching costs are immense, which gives the memory makers structurally higher profit margins.
So when you look at the bull case structural demand from AI, a disciplined three-player oligopoly, volume agreements underwriting the factories, wafer crowd out driving up legacy prices, and higher margins protected by complex packaging, it sounds completely bulletproof.
It really does. And the author acknowledges that three of these factors simply did not exist in the 2017 or 2021 booms. This time structurally is different.
But if this time is different is the most dangerous phrase in finance, we have to respect the bear case.
Always.
Even with genuine structural changes, the base rate of mean reversion, the historical fact that the cycle always comes back down has never lost in 40 years, the first bear argument is simple: priced perfection.
Right. A stock that shoots up 1,000% in 12 months is mathematically assuming that all of those bull arguments will hold true indefinitely.
The easy money has already been made by the people who bought the 2023 crash.
Exactly. And then you run into the illusion of order books.
Phantom demand. We saw this with consumer goods, but how does it happen in enterprise hardware? I mean, if you're a hyperscaler and you've signed an ironclad long-term agreement to guarantee you get chips, aren't you locked in?
You'd think so.
How does that demand just evaporate?
This raises an important question about the psychology of scarcity. When a vital component is in short supply, customers are terrified of not getting enough allocation to build their server racks, so they engage in double ordering.
Oh, it's the toilet paper panic of 2020, but for multi-million dollar tech components.
That is the perfect analogy. A cloud provider needs 10,000 chips. Because there's a shortage, they assume the manufacturer will only allocate them 50% of what they ask for.
So they place orders for 20,000 chips across multiple different suppliers.
Yes. Suddenly, the global market looks like there's demand for 60,000 chips, when only 10,000 are actually needed to run the software. The demand is a phantom.
So from the outside, looking at the order books, that demand looks incredibly robust.
But if AI capital expenditure digests, meaning if companies slow down their massive AI investments because their own end demand softens or model efficiency improves, those ironclad multi-year volume contracts suddenly look very fragile.
Because a contract is only as real as the buyer's ability to actually take delivery.
Right. If a hyperscaler doesn't need the chips, they will find legal or operational ways to delay or cancel the shipments.
And just as demand might be a mirage, there's a very real threat looming on the supply side. We talked earlier about how the three remaining companies learned to cooperate to survive, right?
While oligopoly.
They are playing a careful game of game theory to protect margins. But what happens if a new player enters the market who doesn't care about survival in the same way? The real wild card here is outside the big three. It's China's CXMT.
CXMT is a critical variable that disrupts the entire oligopoly thesis. They are reportedly already sampling HBM for Huawei, backed by domestic tech giants like Xiaomi.
But why does one new player break the game?
Because a state-backed, subsidized entrant is not playing the game for quarterly profit margins. They're motivated by geopolitical strategy and national self-sufficiency.
Oh, right. They need to ensure they have the silicon to run their own AI models, regardless of Western sanctions.
Exactly. So they do not respect the oligopoly's unwritten rule of price discipline. If CXMT starts producing serious volume in 2027 or 2028, even if their technology is a full generation behind, they could flood the market.
They could absorb the lower-end commodity DRAM demand, which frees up factory space for the big three, instantly turning a global shortage into a glut.
Or CXMT might just dump supply onto the market below cost to gain independence, completely destroying the careful profit margins Samsung, Micron, and SK Hynix have built.
Wow. And supply constraints and exorbitant prices always invite innovation to bypass the constraint. That is just the fundamental nature of engineering.
It is.
High prices are the best cure for high prices. Which brings us to the final bear argument, architecture end runs.
Right.
If HBM is insanely expensive and bottlenecked by CoWoS packaging, engineers aren't just going to sit around and wait. They will literally invent new computer architectures to avoid using it. The essay mentions some incredibly dense concepts here, like CXL pooling and KV cache offloading.
Let's break those down. Currently, memory is physically tethered to one specific processor. CXL, or Compute Express Link, is a new technology that essentially creates a high-speed communal pool of memory across different servers.
Like a shared reservoir.
Exactly. Instead of every single processor needing its own massive, expensive stack of HBM, they can share a central reservoir of memory dynamically as needed.
Oh, so it reduces the sheer amount of expensive hardware you need to buy.
Yes.
And KV cache offloading is a software trick. Remember our desk and filing cabinet analogy. The KV cache is basically a bunch of temporary data the AI model generates while it's thinking.
Right.
Offloading it means the software figures out a way to quickly shove those temporary papers down into the cheap NAND basement, keeping the expensive HBM desk clear for the most critical work. You bypass the need to buy a bigger, more expensive desk.
And while these end runs don't completely replace the need for HBM, they significantly change the product mix. They alleviate the bottleneck.
So the highly profitable scarcity we see today isn't guaranteed two cycles from now because the software is actively evolving to route around the hardware constraint.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? The author's synthesis is really fantastic. The memory industry is durably better than it was a decade ago.
Oh, without a doubt.
The floor is higher than it was during the 2023 bloodbath. The cycle hasn't died. It just, as the author puts it, learned to climb while it breathes.
The baseline trend is steeper, driven by the genuine physical demands of AI compute. But the oscillations, you know, the brutal booms and busts driven by factory lead times and phantom demand, they are still going to happen around that upward trend line.
And for you listening, this matters because every time you interact with an AI tool, whether it's summarizing a document or generating an image, the speed and capability of that tool isn't just determined by a sleek processor.
No, not at all.
It is completely constrained by this hypercyclical, heavily manufactured, vertically stacked memory. The economics of this tiny component are currently dictating the financial gravity of the entire tech ecosystem.
It remains the physical bottleneck of the AI revolution, which means it will remain a battleground for trillions of dollars in capital.
But it leaves us with one final provocative thought to ponder. If the massive cost and the absolute scarcity of HBM are currently forcing the brightest engineers in the world to invent new architectures like CXL memory pooling and software offloading to cheap storage, are the memory giants essentially funding their own obsolescence?
It's a real possibility.
When the next down cycle inevitably hits, will the most valuable real estate in tech still be physical memory stacked directly next to a GPU? Or will it be the brilliant software that figured out how to bypass the physical bottleneck entirely?